Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Hello. In my turn, I would like to thank the organizers of this conference, and especially Mr. Morten Bergsmo, Professor Morten Bergsmo, for inviting me and for giving me the opportunity to speak about a very, very interesting topic, kollektive Rechtsgüter und international criminal law. Rechtsgüter, a German word, let's find out what it means. The dominant in the Germanic system's Rechtsgut theory primarily gives an answer to the question of what the legislator can and should forbid its citizens under threat of punishment. The criminal law is intended to ensure the protection of Rechtsgüter, translated as legal goods. It is always necessary to identify an important protected legal good to justify why the conduct may be prohibited by law and why acting against the prohibition may be punished. The state is not entitled to prohibit any act it would consider immoral, indecent, or antisocial. It is intended to identify criminal law as a protective right and to delimit it from a counter model of the penalization of pure duty violations. The idea that criminal law is intended to ensure the protection of Rechtsgüter has been developed by German criminal law scholars Franz Birnbaum, Karl Binding, and Franz von Liszt. Of course, many different authors have given different definitions to Rechtsgut. Although the concept itself is well established, the details in the theory are heavily disputed. An example of a modern definition of Rechtsgut refers to the conditions and the functions needed for free development of the individual, for realization of his fundamental rights. Legal goods are circumstances or purposes which are useful to the individual in his free development within the framework of an overall social system. Of course, the determination of a legal good is a necessary condition for criminalization, but surely not sufficient. It has further to be established that the criminalization serves the protection of the respective legal good. In other words, that the purposes of punishment can be achieved. The Rechtsgut concept does not require actual harm to a Rechtsgut. The endangerment of a Rechtsgut is sufficient. German criminal law, such as Greek criminal law also, acknowledges two different types of offenses criminalizing the endangerment of a Rechtsgut. Offenses of concrete endangerment and of offenses of abstract endangerment. While for the former, the actual occurrence of the danger to the Rechtsgut is an element of the offense, in the latter, the protected Rechtsgut forms the motive for criminalizing of the prohibited conduct, which conduct is considered to be generally dangerous. Indeed, the number of offenses based on abstract endangerment is increasing in the Germanic systems. A modern system of constitutional rights entails both rights and freedoms of the individual, and thus the core value of liberal individualism, but at the same time increasingly recognizes collective interests and social goals and values as well. That facilitates a distinction between so-called individual legal goods, such as life, health, bodily integrity, property, sexual autonomy, etc., and collective or universal legal goods, for example, the functioning of the judiciary, reliability of monetary transactions, environmental goods, etc. Even the most individual-focused version of the concept, the personal Rechtsgut theory, acknowledges the necessity of collective Rechtsgüter. The theory of collective Rechtsgüter distinguishes mainly between those Rechtsgüter which protects the constitutive constitutions conditions of the citizens' liberty, and those which protect the state and its institutions. A very comprehensive and accurate presentation of the different types of collective Rechtsgüter can be found in Roland Heffendel's book, Collective Rechtsgüter im Strafrecht, that was published in 2002. It was controversial whether Rechtsgüter are merely abstract values that underlie the law, or whether they have some real existence in the social sphere, even if not as material substances. It is true that the Rechtsgut concept was developed mainly as an abstract normative concept referring to values, although, especially in the later years, we worked on the materialization of these values in real, even tangible social realities. Contrary to some individual legal goods that refer to the human existence per se or have a visible material substance, collective legal goods refer to a level of significantly more complex dimensions and interactions, such as the above mentioned legal good of judiciary. In cases like this, the maintenance of the real character of collective legal goods fundamentally depends on an adequate process of concretization in proximate realities, capable of expressing what should be comprehended as damage. A critical concept of collective legal goods therefore demands the identification of an existential social dimension. Furthermore, the protection of a collective Rechtsgut always involves the protection of individual legal goods, and thus the damage of a collective Rechtsgut usually causes at least the abstract endangerment of an individual Rechtsgut. Nevertheless, it is impossible to tell in an abstract ex-ante prognosis which concrete individual Rechtsgut will be jeopardized. For example, the issue of an erroneous court decision due to a perjury causes a damage to the functioning of the judiciary as a collective legal good. At the same time, it causes at least an abstract endangerment of individual goods. But we cannot foresee in an ex-ante abstract prognosis exactly which individual Rechtsgüter will be subsequently at stake: personal freedom, honor, property, etc. Of course, there is always the danger of the identification of vague and dubious collective Rechtsgüter, such as, for example, the public confidence in the authorities or the public health. Allegedly, these shortcomings substantially diminish the critical potential of the Rechtsgut concept. The Rechtsgut concept claims to have a critical liberal potential. The modern definitions of the Rechtsgut are meant to properly limit the intervention of criminal law to the protection of fundamental legal goods. So it is argued that the Rechtsgut concept has no analytical power in and of itself. Apart from being criticized as being imprecise and inconsistent in its different variations, it allegedly does not provide the substantive normative criteria to decide which goods or interests should be protected by criminal law and which should not. It is also argued that the Rechtsgut concept allows the criminalization of offenses of mere endangerment, which pretend to protect against the mere abstract danger to collective Rechtsgüter. Thus is criminalized the merely anticipated, far from the actual Rechtsgut, dangerous conduct, without providing any limiting principle for the extension of criminalizations. We should also refer to the fact that the German Constitutional Court, Bundesverfassungsgericht, had not yet adopted the Rechtsgut concept and applies the principle of proportionality, suitability, necessity, adequacy, as the crucial test for determining the legitimacy of criminal laws. Despite strong criticism, the Rechtsgut concept has the potential to restrain the criminal law in a more efficient and meaningful way than other theories. The Rechtsgut concept places substantive legal requirements on criminal offenses. The very existence of the concept stands for the proposition that there are limits within which modern criminal law must operate if it is to claim legitimacy. It also serves as a mediating concept between criminal law norms and the too vague proportionality test. Even the criticism against vague and diffuse collective Rechtsgüter is mostly made on the basis of the critical, self-limiting function of the Rechtsgut concept itself. The legislator is entitled to adopt a penal norm only if it is absolutely necessary to safeguard fundamental individual or collective legal goods. That means the living conditions of our society based on the freedom and the responsibility of the person. Public emotions, or the sum of many individual legal goods, do not constitute a collective legal good. They lack the real, complex nature and value that social institutions and interactions have. They are not needed to realize fundamental liberties, and they are not valuable for the existence of the state that ensures their liberties. In developing international criminal law, we must understand which conduct can be legitimately criminalized on the international level, and therefore also which conduct is inappropriate for treatment by ACL, taking into account the limitations for state sovereignty that this implies. The discrepancy between crimes labeled as international crimes and those labeled as national crimes or ordinary crimes must be convincingly explained. It has been rightly remarked that the Rechtsgut theory can help international criminal law to establish legal foundations in a more principled way than by the current case-by-case approach focusing on the gravity or seriousness of the respective crimes. ICL is clearly focused on systematic or large-scale atrocity crimes. It has a collective, individualistic reach with regard to world peace, international security, and fundamental civil human rights. The existence and validity claim of ICL is predicated upon this collective, individualistic reach. ICL protects individuals as members of humanity, or individuals as members of groups that are part of humanity. There must always be a collective or group element in international crimes, in the sense that the individual victims concerned are not attacked exclusively on the basis of their individuality, but also as members or representatives of certain groups of collective entities, which in turn represent humanity. This is obvious in the case of crimes against humanity and genocide, but it also applies to war crimes, in that here the civilian population of the adverse party is attacked. So the criminalization on the international level would be validated if the criminalization of genocide crimes against humanity and war crimes serve the protection of distinct legal goods, or if the protected legal goods are threatened in a different way than by ordinary human rights abuses or national crimes. A promising approach seems therefore to focus on a distinction made by Professor Koehler. He rightly points out that there are, on the one side, legal goods accepted by the whole international community, and on the other side, legal goods accepted to be those of the whole international community. As a paradigmatic example for an international legal good is international peace referred. International criminal law and the ICC are efforts to address the unstable world. Professor Trifterer states that the peace and security of mankind were for a long time the only expressions summarizing the basic inherent values of the community of nations, which had to be protected in the interest of all individuals and states alike. On the other hand, Professor Kai Ambos has developed some concretizations of the general and abstract collectivistic value of humanity and mankind, a value that is too inclusive to be formulated as a Rechtsgut without further concretization. In the crime of genocide, the Rechtsgut is the uncountable coexistence of cultures, the national, ethnical, racial, or religious group as such. The value of the existence of this pre-characterized group is a concretization of the value of mankind. Of course, as above mentioned, the protection of a collective legal good always involves the protection of individual legal goods. Accordingly, the crime of genocide, for example, protects, besides the existence of a group that is part of humanity, its individual members against the violation of their individual rights, especially life, bodily integrity, liberty. According to Ambos, when it comes to crimes against humanity, the Rechtsgut is less concrete. The people who are protected just as members of humanity. Yet even here, the context element entails a collective dimension of the attack directed against a group of persons and regularly for group-related reasons. Ambos remarks that crimes against humanity challenge the idea that humanity is a collective characterized by human dignity. The Rechtsgut concept would call for investigation of human dignity, especially in order to answer the question if human dignity is a clear enough concept that could serve as a Rechtsgut. The underlying humanitarian purpose for war crimes entails the containment of the conflict and thus contributes to international peace. These offensives shall also ensure human dignity, life and physical integrity of the protected persons, even in times of armed conflict. Ambos points out that in war crimes, the Rechtsgut is the existence of the people in their further contingent and contextual categorization as enemy group, and this value is, too, a concretization of value of mankind. It is obvious that we have to combine the analytic power of the Rechtsgut theory with the overall function of ICL, especially in view of the fact that ICL must always entail a collective or group element. As already mentioned above, it is argued that we have to develop some concretization of a general and abstract collectivist value of humanity, mankind, or human dignity, values that are too inclusive to be formulated as Rechtsgut without further concretization. So, the key question here is, can international peace, humanity, mankind, or human dignity serve as theoretical basis for the concretization of collective Rechtsgut fides international criminal law? In my opinion, it is doubtful whether international peace can serve as a global Rechtsgut in ICL, as it tends to focus on military conflicts and in an interstate relationship. Furthermore, it is not adequate for bringing out the specific collective characteristic of war crimes. It is also doubtful if the notion of human dignity can effectively describe the specific collective characteristic of international crimes due to its fundamental individual dimension. Although the protection of human dignity is a legal good that has to be primarily protected by every liberal state, it always preserves its fundamental personal dimension, as it always and foremost refers to each and every individual. On the other hand, humanity or mankind cannot, within the context of the Rechtsgut concept, effectively serve as a theoretical basis for the concretization of Rechtsgüter in ICL. Humanity means both the quality of being human, humanness, and the aggregation of all human beings, humankind. Taken in the former sense, crimes against humanity suggest that the defining feature of these offenses is the value they injure, namely humanness. The law traditionally distinguishes between crimes against persons, crimes against property, crimes against public order. Here the idea is to supplement the traditional taxonomy of legal protected values by adding that some offenses are crimes against humanness as such. Undoubtedly, humanity is a virtue associated with basic ethics of altruism derived from the human condition. However, given this broad definition, it is doubtful whether it can, at least directly, serve as a theoretical basis for the concretization of Rechtsgüter. And I come to the end. In order to identify the specific collective element of international crimes, we have to take under consideration that the international criminality is characterized by state involvement, which makes it impossible to expect justice to be carried out by the state itself and requires the exceptional measure of international law. The protected interest is here primarily an objective value that motivates the international community. I believe that the collective element which motivates the exceptional measure of international criminal law is global solidarity. The reference to global solidarity gives prominence to real existing human, group and state relations and interactions, and not only to ethical virtues. Global human solidarity is a collective good per se. It is a form of unity that mediates between individuals and communities, especially in times of crisis, and constitutes an essential condition of social living. Our coexistence as nations and individuals is based on the common acceptance of some minimum standards that preserve diversity in a spirit of tolerance and pluralism, minimum standards that must be followed even in times of war. This legal good has also the particularity that its infringement appears in two aspects. A crime of genocide, a crime of humanity against humanity, or a war crime infringes, in parallel with individual legal goods, the global human solidarity as such. On the other hand, the omission of the international community to react to such a severe infringement causes a further new damage to the collective entity of human solidarity. Of course, we have to diverse the relations, interactions that are grouped under the broad category of global solidarity and are offended by international crimes. It's a challenge for the Rechtsgut theory to elaborate on that collective good, which entails the acknowledgement of our multiple interdependencies between continents, nations, and individuals, and the awareness of our common destiny. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.